Hey, everybody, before we start the podcast, we have a special announcement to make.
Ooh, exciting. What is it?
We will be at Anime Dallas 2023.
Oh, is that the one that's taking place November 24th to 26th?
Yes, the Hyatt Regency in downtown Dallas.
Oh, we were just at Anime Houston, and now the fun continues at Anime Dallas.
I think this will be our fourth Anime Dallas.
Oh, we're good friends of ours. We love being there.
Yes. Yeah. So get your Black Friday deals instead of like fighting people to the death at Walmart. Go to all the great vendors they have there at Anime Dallas. The vendors room is always so much fun, and you can buy stuff for Christmas for people.
Come walk off all that Turkey Day food and hang out.
Yeah. We'll be bumping fists and causing smiles, doing our panels, and come to our table, and we will have a whole bunch of fun.
Good chance there's probably going to be candy and giveaways, too.
Yes. We will see you there.
Anime Dallas 2023.
Please listen carefully.
And now, live from a saloon in Valentine, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two cowpokes and their posse, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today, we couldn't stop.
This train is running off the tracks.
Yeah. We thought we finished Build a Posse, but then we said, wait a minute, who are our posses going after?
It's time for a final roundup. Well, not a final roundup, but an official roundup to go after some bad guys, some villains.
And a lot of our Build a Crews, we've done the villain that they face. And I started thinking about it, and we're going to do our Photoshops, and I was like, oh, there's no villain to put in the background like we've done before.
Yeah, so the creepy looming emperor-style head in the background of the Photoshop.
Yeah, so this is Build a Posse Outlaw. We're picking the outlaw that the posse is a-going after.
Yeah, yeah.
A-going, too. They're not going. They're a-going.
They're a-fixing to go.
Well, fixing to go after.
I reckon.
So Mikey and I have come up with our top three favorite villains that a posse would go after. I try to keep mine themed to be outlaws. Mikey may have too, but
I did. I kept it fairly on the rails as far as theme goes.
Because we're not going to do like greatest villain of all time, Darth Vader, apparently, according to I forget what list that is. There's a list they did the greatest.
I kept coming across the Empire's 100 greatest villains from Empire magazine. So
really,
And that, like, and was not just like, was, not just that list, but in reference to that list.
Was that the one that Darth Vader as number one?
I would imagine.
Yeah, it should. It's called Empire Magazine.
That's on brand. That fits. That tracks.
Mikey, let's flip a coin.
Reach for the sky.
Let's
flip.
Or we can do the. Do you ever see like what like Annie Oakley and stuff? They used to do glass balls that they would shoot out of the sky. They throw glass balls. That sounds so unsafe.
No, that sounds way better.
Because in a good way, I'm saying it's funny how like now everything's like safety. But back then they're like, hey, this girl can shoot, and she can shoot like looking at a mirror while she's holding the rifle over her shoulder backwards.
Let's stand around and watch,
and I'm going to throw these glass balls up in the air. Is that sugar glass? No, it's glass.
Yeah. What's cooler than fireworks? Glass fireworks. Little Timmy can't see, but man, what a show. No, oh yeah, it's so true. But no, this is a safe shootout as I shoot the coin through and take the lead because hey, that's how we work around them parts. I also got sidetracked because I was like, who the villain do we pick for our sci-fi crew? But I realized we picked the ship, which was like the fun bonus.
No, I think we picked a villain too.
Did we?
Yeah,
we went extra on that one with the ship though.
Yeah.
Pick a horse. What's your favorite movie horse?
We're going to keep going. No. You can't stop us.
No, this is the guy we're going after. This is the bad guy. But I did start silly.
It's Trigger. I picked Trigger.
Oh, yeah. There you go. As the horse.
Yeah.
I pick Atreyu.
Okay.
Artex. Atreyu's the kid.
I don't know why Trigger. Yeah. Trigger just came to my head.
Yeah.
It's a famous horse. I think he stuffed the thing, too. That's the weird thing about that.
Oh, to keep him around, like taxidermy afterwards? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was Roy Rogers' horse.
It was either he had it stuffed or he was buried with it. Like, no, for real.
No,
like,
one of
those guys was buried with their horse.
I know.
And Roy Rogers seems wholesome enough to do it where people aren't like, that's kind of weird.
It is kind of weird. Did he make the more so all over the place? I love it though. Did he make the restaurants? Is that his restaurant? Is that like
it's branded from him? So I'd imagine that's like an estate thing.
American Tim Hortons.
Yeah, Roy Rogers. And Roy Rogers is a drink. It's the male version of a Shirley Temple.
What?
You know how a Shirley Temple is the kid's version of
it's
whatever?
Grenadine and
maraschino cherry.
It's grenadine and 7-Up. Grenadine and ginger ale?
Yeah.
Something like that.
I think if you do it with root beer, some darker soda, it's a Roy Rogers.
A Coke and grenadine is a Batman. You know that.
Does it make you sad that you don't have parents? Why is it, why is it called a Batman? This drink is amazing.
Just kidding.
Let's get to it. Bad guys. Here's what we're going after. But we'll keep with the silly because I went animated and I wanted to talk about An American Tale, Fievel Goes West.
Oh, wow. The sequel.
The sequel to An American Tale.
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought. You just made me think about something I didn't think about forever. We used to have a Fievel doll.
Absolutely.
Like stuffed animal. He was like one of the
probably got it from Disney.
A couple feet.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the 24 incher, I guess that would be. Yeah, I think we did get it at Disney because it was like it was in our house as a decoration.
Yeah.
Like it was never someone's, you know,
stuffy.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Did it have the little the cork pop guns that he had?
No, it was
West?
From the OG.
Oh,
it was the little Jewish mouse or whatever. He was dressed like
Fievel Mouskowitz, yeah.
He was dressed like a little Russian peasant.
Okay, so here's the quick backstory though. I love Fievel Goes West. And I love it more than the original.
Okay, that's fair.
Which I like lived all my life like, oh, this is a sequel that's better than the original. Like that was just always a thing. And then I grew up and people were like, the second one is terrible. And I'm like, what? Nobody told me. Yeah. And I can see the argument having grown up and now looked at two as like not a kid.
Yeah.
But it was always my favorite. So it can use to hold a special place in my heart.
Of course.
It is not Don Bluth. The original was Don Bluth, so that's why the first one was amazing. Just
Don Bluth.
Because of that one
amazing
man.
Story, Don Bluth.
Absolutely.
He just left Disney and then started his own thing.
He was like, yeah.
I don't like the way you're doing stuff. I'm going to do it my way.
And I'm going to crush it.
Yeah, they're like, you'll never be a success in this town. Disney owns everything. And he's like, you want to bet? I'm going to make a video game that's impossible to play.
And then Arrested Development went and ruined the Bluth name. but the second one does get points because it is Steven Spielberg produced with Amblin Entertainment. So still some good crew behind it. But the bad guy in this is a giant cat.
Yeah.
Who does all the stereotypical tropes. He's the one that tricks the mice with an ambush and a puppet and convinces them to go out west in the first place. Mm-hmm. When they get there, he's there to trap them into essentially indentured servitude to build the saloon that he's in charge of because he's overrun the town. And he's blocked up the water tower. I mean, it's all, it's the kid's version of like, I don't know if it's Spielberg directly, but this crew was like, let's take everything about that's cool about old Western movies that these kids have never seen and put it all into one movie.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So, but bad guy is Cat Arwall.
Cat Arwall.
Voiced by John Cleese.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something like. I never registered as a kid, you know? Like, this is way before I had any idea what Monty Python was. Mm-hmm. So this is just John Cleese being a masterful Western gentleman, because if you look at this picture, it's not a bad guy looking. He's the old West, like, good guy running a town bad guy. Mm-hmm. He's very debonair. He's dressed up. Yeah. He looks like the cat from Cat Returns, the Miyazaki movie. yeah, no, he's all very gentlemanly.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the old, like... I'm a gentleman, and I had my rough ways, but I swear they're behind me. Mm-hmm. But of course not. He's running the whole show, and he's the town overlord. And it's John Cleese, and then just for me, the memory I have of that movie is that he has a little sidekick that's a spider buddy that's kind of like Kevin Kline in Wild Wild West, the spider. You know, it's that trope all over again, but it's voiced by John Lovitz. which is hilarious.
Jealous?
Yeah, hilarious now. But when I was a kid, that spider used to scare the crap out of me. And I was like, wait, I used to get scared by John Lovitz? And it's like, yeah, you did.
I don't know. I don't think that's too far off.
Yeah.
Jealous? Sorry.
And the spider's name was T.R. Chula. As in tarantula. This movie's amazing. I mean, it is really a great Western. It just happens to feature animals and animation.
What year did that come out?
Ooh, the sequel
1989?
Was 91. The original was 89.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And then, about 2 years later. But you got James Stewart's in there, Dom DeLuise, John Cleese, just astounding for all a mouse in a playing a cowboy. Yeah, James Stewart plays the hound dog, who's the retired drunk sheriff, whose name is Wiley Burp.
I've definitely seen this because I know what's weird is my mother is the one who loved the first one.
I believe it,
but I've definitely seen the second one and more than once. And I was like well into my teens in 91. So what it makes me think that it was probably because of my niece.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because she was like, well, she's your age. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
And I can see it being a, hey, Kevin, watch your niece.
And this movie.
Yeah. And this movie. Because all the stuff you're talking about, I'm like, yeah, I remember. But I don't remember being like, oh, this is abjectly terrible in my brain.
Nope.
I don't remember thinking this was horrible.
Now, I don't
kids movie, but everything you're telling me, I know I've seen it at least more than once just because I'm remembering things.
Yeah. Just it's already in the brain. Yeah. It's like, how did it get there? To be fair, I haven't seen it since probably teenager before years. So it might be a personal rewatch that would be hilarious. But
yeah.
The bad guy even has a weapon. It's a human revolver, but because they're animals, it becomes a cannon. You know, just for space that he launches at people, but it's a six shooter. That's so fun. So yeah, Cat Arwal, you were almost the cat we were gonna chase as a posse. We're chasing this animated kitten. He's wearing a suit. Don't ask questions. Just point us in the right direction.
Oh my gosh.
He's got a little spider in tow. That's wearing boots. I might make that number one. Actually, that's an amazing visual.
All right, my first third pick is also kind of silly too, but I mean, he was an actual intimidating character, but he's in a silly movie.
That's what we're here for.
And my choice is the man known as El Guapo.
El Guapo. What a great name.
From The Three Amigos.
Yeah, you got to do the dance when you say Three Amigos.
Oh. El Guapo is the main antagonist of The Three Amigos, portrayed by Alfonso Arau. And Three Amigos, it's one of those movies that, like, I know for you and for me and people like my age and younger, it's just iconic.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize that this is a cult movie. And I didn't realize it until recently, like literally this past month. When Steve Martin and Martin Short were on Conan O'Brien's podcast.
Uh-huh.
And he was talking to him about it. And they were like, that movie did horribly when it came out.
Wow. Okay.
Like, it was like, what are you guys doing? But it's become like a cult classic, apparently.
That makes sense. Yeah. I love it. But I could see these are because that's the SNL curse too. Like trying to make a movie property with SNL people has always sort of had this weird shade on it. But
it's so good.
It's so fun.
It's so fun. It's one of the most perfect comedy movies to me. And it's helped along by this character of El Guapo because he's literally intimidating and scary.
Yeah.
And he's not incompetent either. He has a whole bunch of incompetent people working for him. But he's hilarious. He's kind of a dandy in a lot of ways. He dresses really nice. He's into photography. He's setting up that weird like Middle Eastern scene or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He knows fancy words like plethora.
Of course. Yeah. He's an educated gentleman. He has class.
Would you say I have a plethora of piñatas?
A plethora?
I love how his name is just El Guapo.
And the handsome, right?
The handsome. And his head guy's just named El Jefe.
The boss.
The boss. And that's it.
And the title from the title of the movie, Three Friends.
You got. He's just. I mean, he's obviously a bully. They run around and just shake down these little Mexican villages.
Yes.
And cause all kinds of problems. He's despicable. He's terrible. But he's just. He's almost like the high school movie bully. Even though he seems like he's probably murderous. They really don't show it.
Only a little bit murderous. You know the
there's that funny scene. You know the. He's buying guns from the German.
Yes.
And he's like got one of the rifles and he tells that one guy, he's like, hey, what's that guy's name up there? And he's like, oh, that's Pedro. And he's like, Pedro, hold out your hat. Hold it out higher. And he acts like he's going to shoot the hat with the rifle. And then he shoots Pedro and he's like, oh, this is a great gun.
I love this gun. Sorry, Pedro. No, he doesn't even say sorry. No. And for being a comedy movie, it does have that. It is a sinister thing to me when the bad guy is like overly nice and charming. Like,
yeah.
It's like, oh, we're gonna be friends until you cross me, and then it's murder.
Yes, it's just great. There's so many fun scenes with him in it. Like when he meets the three amigos. And they think that they're doing a performance.
Oh, yes.
They're like, tell us we'll die like dogs. And he's like, what? Tell us we'll die like dogs. He's like, yeah, you will die like dogs. No, we will fight like lions. And they're running around shooting their guns in the air. And he's like, I like these guys. They are funny guys. He's like, just kill one of them.
Keep the other two around for my entertainment. Hilarious.
Anyway, he's a hilarious, scary bad guy. He'd be a lot scarier if he had a competent crew, but he doesn't.
Yeah, but he really does. I don't know what it is. Christoph Waltz has a similar thing.
Yeah.
As like that, the endearing villain? I don't know.
No, because they...
overly happy villain.
It's his birthday, and they buy him a sweater, and he's like, I love it! And he like puts it around his neck like some kind of jock. And then he's like thanking everyone, and Chevy Chase is in there. He's like, we fought all these places, and he's like, and you,
it's ridiculous.
El Guapo, he's hilarious.
The handsome.
I love him.
And Three Amigos. That is an excellent pick.
And Scott will be happy that we mentioned Three Amigos because I'll get picking from Three Amigos.
That's true. Now it's official. Well, almost, mostly official. All right. Number two, middle child for the outlaw. Does that make them extra grumpy because they're the middle child outlaw?
Maybe. Possibly.
Probably not for my guy. I'm gonna bury the lead a little bit.
Oh.
This performance was widely lauded by film critics. He won an Academy Award, a Golden Globe, and a British Academy Film Award just for this one role.
Wow.
Other accolades includes this villain's presence on numerous greatest villain lists, most notably in Empire Magazine's list of 100 greatest movie characters of all time, in which he ranked number 44.
There was foreshadowing earlier. Mikey foreshadowed that.
That's why it was on my brain, because it was in my notes. and then finally, as well as being named the most realistic film depiction of a psychopath by an independent group of psychologists in the Journal of Forensic Sciences.
Who could this be?
Who do you think it is based on that one little bullet point?
Is it the Joker?
No, this is a Western bad guy. I forgot about this in all truthfulness, and then it hit me, and I was like, oh, absolutely. Only beat out by number one for personal reasons, but... this is Javier Bardem as Anton Chigurh in No Country for Old Men.
Yes.
What's that, friendo? So Modern Western. He is a newer pick, but he is a psychopath, as identified by an independent group of psychologists in the Journal of Forensic Sciences. He's got a weird haircut. His weapon of choice is a cattle gun?
Yeah.
A bolt gun.
Yeah.
That... has no ammo. Awesome.
Yeah.
You know, don't, I guess he does need to reload it. He needs to repressurize it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's for making steaks.
That's it.
And it'll take a door lock out too.
It's so useful, and nothing can stop it. No door locks, no skulls, no human bodies. It's first time I've ever seen that as a weapon in a film or property.
Yeah.
And just a creative part, like a small detail, really, in the narrative, but it just adds so much to it.
Makes people flip a coin.
Yeah. That's the two-faced thing again. Yeah. So this is why he's one of the ultimate bad guys to me, because the lack of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
It is a faceless, not a faceless, it is just an unknown evil terror coming after you. It is a force that will achieve its goal, which most times is nefarious, by any means necessary, and mm-hmm. is very good at doing that, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, making people flip a coin, that's two-faced. It's like, I have no stake in this. We'll let the universe decide.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the universe has decided that you don't get to exist anymore, so say hello to my cattle gun.
Jeez.
And then nothing about it. Walks off, grabs his change, you know, talks to the person on the street as he leaves the store. The other thing that makes this an interesting is that unrelentingness, because I started out thinking about my bad guys like, oh, my posse is going to go after somebody. Mm-hmm. They're going to go save a town.
Mm-hmm.
This is a bad guy that pursues people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I'm trying to think of how that conflict would arise, but I kind of like it. Like, what did the posse do? Because the reason, in No Country for Old Men, it's a bag of money that is found by people, mm-hmm. and then Anton is sent to retrieve the bag of money.
Mm-hmm.
No Country for Old Men has a real simple premise. You can go read it. It's like three lines on Wikipedia. But the movie is very keyed in on the relationships of the people and the little details of, like, what's going on in all their interactions.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what did my posse do to make Anton mad? You know? It could just be that some of them are animated and they're in the real world. I don't know. So that's the part I have to figure out. But that would be terrifying for a bad guy for me. It's just like people laugh at the joke of like the snail that always follows you. And if it touches mm-hmm. you, you die. You're like, oh, it's a snail, whatever. But like every day, unrelenting.
That's
like,
a joke? What joke?
It's
a thing. I've never heard of that before. That's terrifying.
It's a would you rather. It's like you get like all the money set for life.
Mm-hmm.
But the condition is there's a snail that will always be after you. And if it touches you, you die.
I don't like that. It's scary.
But it's a snail.
It's scary.
Ship it, put it in a box, and put it in the ocean. But it never stops. Immortal snail.
Scary.
But that's why it's scary. It's scary like Javier Bardem is in his weird haircut. He never stops. He has no qualms about doing what it takes to get to you. Mm-hmm. So that's a creepy bad guy to me. I don't know what I did to justify him chasing after us, but that can be figured out later as we're peeing our pants and fleeing and getting as far, far away from Frendo as we can.
That's such a good movie. Is that the Coen brothers' best movie, you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
And it gets points. This is.
I agree.
It's one of the rare instances of like, I kind of almost hated it when I first saw it.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I just...
Was it too much of a bummer for you?
It wasn't too... It was just, like, it was almost too slow and too subtle.
Okay.
But I have seen it a handful of times afterward, and it's gotten better every time I've seen it.
Mm.
So, I recommend it to people that either haven't seen it or maybe saw it once, and was like, what the heck?
It's an acquired taste.
It is. Oh, it's so good, though.
Mm-hmm. Awesome second pick. All right, my second pick is someone who we know, and it's kind of the reason why this even exists, what we're doing right now. My second pick is a central character in the Red Dead series.
Yeah.
It's the head of the Vanderlyn gang, Dutch Vanderlyn himself.
Dutch! I hate Dutch.
Yeah, from the original Red Dead, he's the guy you're after. He's pretty much the main antagonist of the original Red Dead. And then in Red Dead Redemption 2, it's a backstory, a prequel. So you learn about the young Dutch Vanderlyn. And pretty much, I would kind of say that that whole game, Red Dead Redemption 2, is almost his story more than it is anyone else's story.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, it leads into the next game with, like, he's the through line of it all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because Arthur doesn't, spoiler, Arthur doesn't make it through.
Yes.
And John doesn't show up until like halfway through the second game. It's messed up because it's a prequel. Yes. But you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
It's one of those kind of flip-floppy things, but he's like the through line through it all. He's there through the entire thing.
Very much so.
And the whole reason why the first game is happening, really, and then the whole reason why everything is going on in the second game. For those of you who don't know, Red Dead Redemption, the first one, just because he's more of a villain, you have a former gang member, John Marston, who's given it up and has a farm now. And then the authorities come and they're like, hey, man, we're trying to get your old gang leader. You got to know where he is because you're in the gang and you're one of his lieutenants.
Yes.
And it's like, no, I'm on a farm now. Well, guess what? You're going to go find him or else we're taking your family out and everything. You know, that's pretty much blackmailed him.
Yeah, it's kind of like reverse Dances with Wolves. But
yeah. So you're spending that whole game just kind of making your way through the remnants of the Dutch Vanderlyn gang until you get to Dutch.
Yeah.
And then Red Dead Redemption 2, you are playing a character named Arthur Morgan, who is one of the lieutenants in the Dutch Vanderlyn gang when he was young.
Yes.
He's a really interesting character. And the neat thing, one of the reasons we love video games and we love video games like this is playing it, you get to know a character so much more in depth than you would in a movie.
Oh, for sure.
It's more book-like, really, when you think about it, because you spend so much time with them.
That, and they have, like, yes, you get the cool chapter and cutscenes, but there's also the repeated dialogue. It's like, all right, Dutch, I've heard you say that, like, 8 times.
So Dutch is voiced by Benjamin Byron Davis.
Yes.
And his gang terrorized the West until about 1899, and there was a botched train robbery, and he kind of started losing his mind. And that's kind of the through line of Red Dead Redemption 2. He goes from being this idealist who believes in like the code and law of the old West and that men are supposed to find their own way and not be, the government should not have control over you. Almost kind of a anarchist / libertarian view of things.
Except what they called it in those times was manifest destiny.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what he believes in. And he doesn't like that, you know, the civilized East is encroaching on the West with their cities and their
highfalutin ways,
their horseless carriages.
Oh, that's right.
All that kind of stuff. So he's an idealist. It's kind of funny because the game plays out like they want you to. They make him really warm and fatherly, and he seems like a great leader at first. Mm-hmm. And he's an idealist, and everything he's doing is, you know, against the man. The man's not going to keep us down. He's witty and he's charismatic and he's kind of a slight dandy. He's like dresses the nicest, has the nicest tent. He listens to music on the gramophone.
It's I think we've made that point about all the villains we've talked about so far. It's like they have to show class. It's like, I've come up to this now. I used to be a degenerate bad guy, but now I swear I'm good. Look at how I'm dressed.
And he takes in all these like ne'er-do-wells and orphans, and he's like raised people from children everyone's a family. But then as you go through the game, stuff starts to go bad and he just starts to lose his mind.
Yeah.
And he gets more and more brutal and more unhinged and more paranoid. And you suss out who the mole is in your gang, and he doesn't want to believe you because the guy's so loyal and he values loyalty over anything. And,
that's it. You know, trust and losing his mind and who to believe. And you
tell him he ain't making sense no more. He ain't making sense no more. And he's like, you ain't got no loyalty, you know, and then guns start slinging and everything starts going crazy.
Yes.
And people start dying / leaving the gang. And that's kind of why John and Abigail left the gang, because he had totally lost his mind.
No longer the leader that he was when he signed up.
But I mean, he's like this awesome amalgamation, like Red Dead does so well.
Yes.
I can't believe I'm going to make this comparison, but you had said it much like they did in Five Goes West.
Yeah.
They take all these tropes of Westerns and just squish them all together.
Yeah.
And take all the best bits of everything And he has a lot of those best bits of the gang leader. You know, he has that El Guapo dandiness. He
has that dandiness
from
Catterwall.
From Catterwall.
No, very boisterous, yeah. And that's like props to Rockstar for that, because that's something Rockstar has always done right. Like with their little side missions and sub characters, there's always like there's always a narrative hook to it. Like even in the little moments. Mm-hmm. And Dutch is another good example of that, just because he's such a complex character.
Yeah. But you're right. By the end of it, you hate him like you're supposed to.
That's it.
Because you're playing Arthur Morgan and he grows to hate someone that he loved. And they do a really good job of spooling that out.
Especially for what you were saying, like the framing and the perspective of the game is you're the like almost the new guy in the gang, and it sets up Dutch as like the perfect leader. Like the things he's saying, they make sense.
Yeah.
And you haven't heard differently because it's the start of the game. Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, he's not Thanos. He's just he knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, he's actually just a really smart, almost crazy guy.
Yeah.
Also gets points. You just made me realize now this is Rockstar and Red Dead doing good storytelling, even knowing expectations.
Right.
You know what happens to Dutch because you played the first game first.
Right.
You know? Knowing that going into the second game, there's so many surprises and interesting complexity in that journey.
Yeah.
That don't betray the outcome you already know.
Right. They really fleshed it out.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is from a guy who doesn't like knowing what happened.
That's what I'm saying. So this one gets points for being the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
Normally you could be like, I know what happens to Dutch. Why do I follow him? But the game is interesting and engaging enough that you're like, oh, I get why this is starting this way.
Mm-hmm. So good old Dutch Vanderlyn. You love him, then you hate him.
Yep. Something I've recently learned about Red Dead too is those voice actors are really big into like cameo stuff and like
cameo?
And fan interaction.
Yeah.
Like they're apparently it always delights them. I've seen every video I've seen of like, hey, this guy from Red that, you know, the one of the voices from Red Dead, I saw him at the grocery store and this is what he did. And it's always just like them being uber nerds, like the voice actors we've met, they seem all seem super friendly.
Yeah.
And that's always awesome. Willing to do that Dutch voice character. It's like, man, don't talk like that. It just makes me mad just hearing that tone.
Mikey
and
feels betrayed.
I've been Dutched. Double Dutched. No, but that is a great pick. And homage to the whole reason we're doing the posse roundup.
He would have been number one if it wasn't for me wanting to talk about my number one.
That's why we're doing it. It's personal favorites.
But we're on to your number one now.
My number one. And my number one is an amazing bad guy, just purely for charisma and the guy that plays him. He's played by Daniel Day-Lewis.
Ah.
And the character's name is William Cutter. But he goes by the nickname Bill the Butcher.
Oh, wow.
From a tiny little film called Gangs of New York. which is a joke because Gangs of New York is a 2002 movie, epic historical drama, according to Wikipedia, directed by Martin Scorsese.
Yeah. Everyone was confused because they're like, oh, he's doing another gang movie. And they're like, why aren't there a bunch of Italians in the 50s?
Yeah.
What's going on, Martin Scorsese?
Oh, wait, is this the 1850s? And it kind of is. It's 1863. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of Wild West in that it's New York when it's sort of burgeoning.
Yeah, like, it's the era, though. That's the same era.
Yep. So it mainly deals with the Five Points, which was the points where all the boroughs at that time in New York met up. And Daniel Day-Lewis, Bill the Butcher, plays the head of one of the gangs, the two rival gangs, and his gang is called the Protestant Confederation of American Natives.
It's so funny. Yeah. It's so funny.
Yeah. And they go up against the Irish Catholic, Irish Catholic immigrant gang, the Dead Rabbits, which is either what they survived off of or what they end up being, because a whole bunch of them do end up getting killed in this movie.
That's so funny. That's like, it's like this is the name of our gang. What's the name of your game? I don't know. We're just a bunch of dead rabbits.
Don't mind us. We're no trouble at all. The Dead Rabbits are led by Liam Neeson. A real nice counterpoint to Bill the Butcher, which is, I'll get into my rant. Bill the Butcher, awesome. Daniel Day-Lewis, he's method. You've seen him. He goes crazy.
Yeah.
Most people, I think, would go for There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
And his whole, like, I drink your milkshake, I drink it up, because that's very Western cowboy bad guy. Mm-hmm. This is more over the top, like circus sideshow bad guy because he throws knives. But I bring this up because Gangs of New York is one of the few movies that I really, really do not like.
What? Oh.
I would almost say I hate this movie.
Oh. Mikey almost never uses the H word.
I never use the H word. I do hate this movie, except for Daniel Day-Lewis and his soul role. So that's what elevates him to be my number one bad guy. Yeah. He's so good that he makes me like a movie that I would otherwise wish I could forget I saw.
What don't you like about it?
It's so weird. So it's Scorsese, right? Which at this point is almost like a mark of you're going to have a good time. This is enjoyable cinema by a guy that's done it for most of his life. Leonardo DiCaprio, charming in most things. Cameron Diaz, really out of place here, but I love her. Could have worked. Daniel Day-Lewis, he crushes it. He saves it. But the movie starts off with this, is that prologue that comes before or epilogue?
Prologue.
Yeah, epilogue after.
Epilogue after,
okay.
Yeah.
So the prologue in this movie, the opening, deals with Daniel Day-Lewis and his gang going up against Liam Neeson and the Dead Rabbits.
Right.
And it's essentially, it shows you the start of this gang rivalry. And it's awesome, and it's intense, and it's Scorsese, it's cool action shots, it's fantastically paced. And then it just says, okay, that all happened, now we'll get to the real story. And the real story is Leonardo DiCaprio being Jack from Titanic in New York against some really cool people, but being dumb and boring. And he has a love interest with Cameron Diaz, and then the Civil War breaks out, and the five boroughs get forgotten, and there's so much going on in this movie, and it's hard to care about any of it that, I don't know, it was just such a mess, and I really wanted to see the story that I was delivered right at the start of the movie.
Oh, I see.
That I had a hard time readjusting my expectations to get through the rest of it. So that's on me. I get it. Like, this movie has won awards. I think it might have won Best Picture for the year it came out, but I was like, what? It took a left turn to me for the middle of the first act, second act, and I never recovered, and I was kind of mad that they did it. I was like, you wasted such a good character and all these good setups, and I don't know. I didn't want that story, so I don't like Gangs of New York.
But you like Daniel Day-Lewis.
Very much so.
Are you a fan of people saying they're not a fan of his method acting?
Oh, absolutely. It's super pretentious.
Okay, yeah, because David Harbour's gone on record, and Martin Freeman has come out and said,
Bilbo.
Like both of them are like, acting's a job, do your job. You come into your job, you put on your apron, and then when you're done with your job, you hang up your apron.
Yes.
So do you agree with them? And
yes, they are not wrong. Most of me is on that side of the argument. Like, it is a creative-minded job, but you are still showing up to perform and do your duty.
Mm-hmm.
Totally get that. But I also come at this from, like, the music side of it, and there are some, like, there's some great music done by really weird people through really weird processes.
Right.
Does it work for everybody? No. But does it get some greatness out every once in a while? Yes. Yeah. And I think for the acting side of it, I think Daniel Day-Lewis gets a pass. He's the exception that's like, oh, he is super weird, but here's what you get with that super weirdness.
Right.
And it's excellence.
So maybe the argument needs to be more of, don't call it method acting, call it what Daniel Day-Lewis does. You know, because, like he's allowed to do it because he's so bloody weird.
That's it.
Anyway.
Yeah.
He's just a odd dude. You know, I kind of get that.
Yeah.
And I kind of get why, what people should be really taking umbrage with is the people that are trying to do what he does when they're not that type of person.
Exactly.
It's almost like the people who, and you'll know this from art school.
Exactly.
Who they're like, I'm a cubist. And you're like, no, all the cubists died like in the 70s because cubism was a movement that happened around the turn of the last century, buddy.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. So you can't be a cubist.
Yeah.
You can be something new that kind of
influenced by cubism,
but you can't be a cubist.
Yeah.
So it's almost like he's like a Picasso of acting. It's like Picasso did his thing brilliantly.
Oh, very much so.
But don't just do, I can draw horribly kind of weird things and be like, look, I'm an artist. And it's like, no, Picasso was doing something on purpose. It was very thought out.
There's
a lot of reason behind it.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what he was doing and know art history and know where he came from, it makes sense.
Absolutely.
So that's what you're saying with Daniel Day-Lewis?
I get it. No, that's absolutely very much the distinction because, yeah, and art's cool, man. Like, it works for Daniel Day-Lewis, but I do have the problem with the people that, like, oh, that's the one method you do to achieve
his greatness.
Yeah.
That's like, that's probably why these other actors are upset, because they probably end up working with these like 20-year-olds who are like, I do it like Daniel Day-Lewis. No, you need to call me John this whole time because my character's name is John. And David Harbour and Martin Freeman are sitting there going like,
oh my God,
dude, you're not Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yep.
And then they get mad at Daniel Day-Lewis for influencing, you know, Toby, who wants to be called John.
Yeah. And if you want to do it right, which I think Day-Lewis did as well, is like, you kind of got to build into that. Like, he wasn't as Day-Lewis as we know him today when he first started.
Yeah.
We got inklings of it. It's like, wow, this kid's really good. It's like, oh, yeah, he's very serious. He, like, he trained for this. Mm-hmm. And then it became, oh, yeah, he stays like that person when he goes home. And it's like, oh, yeah, he has trouble forgetting the character that he embodied and now, you know, has trauma because of it. It's like, okay, Daniel Day-Lewis, maybe go back to like nine.
he's an odd dude. Yeah,
but in rare instances, him being one of them, it does produce greatness.
Yeah, I get it. No, I understand. That's a good. That's a good assuming positions way to look at a controversial subject such as that.
Yeah, in my mind, Daniel Day-Lewis and Bjork are on the same tier.
Oh yeah,
why
are you wearing that weird swan dress?
Because she can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because she has three albums at least that justify wearing a swan dress in public.
Exactly.
So, but as Bill the Butcher, this is just a simple bad guy like we've already talked about. He runs the town.
Yep.
But he runs it with an iron fist and many, many sharp knives and has carcasses and dead meat hanging up around him to remind you that, yes, he smiles, but he has, I don't remember if he has a bullet for an eye. He has some fake eye.
Yeah, yeah.
The details are scarce because, like I said, I try to forget this movie. But he has a crazy eye, has a crazy, the old dastardly mustache.
Yeah.
You could twirl it and you're like, okay, bad guy. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to be method. You grew the mustache. Perfect. But he's great. He chews up every scenery he's in, especially while he's chewing meat because he's the butcher and he's a bad guy and it's just laying it on thick. But he's very smart and he knows when he's getting had and he knows. He's not the villain that gets mad when he's being double-crossed right away. He's the smart guy that's like, oh, I realize that you're trying to plot against me. So talk to me again in 3 days when we're going to make your body disappear.
Oh, yes.
Like that type of villain.
He hates slowly.
That's it.
That's that. Those are the scariest villains.
He hates slowly. He hates incompetence. He hates bad manners, you know, but it's his manners.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, okay.
Huh. So I think they pulled a little bit of Dutch out from that movie too.
I would believe it.
It's funny, you can see the things that Red Dead borrowed.
Yeah. And that same sort of like trying to make it a no big deal by being loud and boisterous, like, oh, we're all just having fun here, aren't we? Why is everybody getting so tense? And then he throws a knife and you're like, what? Crazy. So yeah, Daniel Day-Lewis, you saved a terrible movie, and so you get to be my bad guy that my posse's chasing after. Because that we can just go to the town and be like, you're up to no good, butcher.
I'd sit here and try to defend that movie, because I know Scott would probably want me to. but the thing is I only saw it in the theater when it came out, and I've never seen it since.
Yep.
So I can't really say. I don't remember walking out of there good or bad.
To be fair, it is probably the most prime for a reassumption because I have only seen it the once and I really did not like it.
Oh, wow. You only saw it once, too.
Hmm. So maybe for the future, but
maybe a reassumption.
Somebody's going to have to bribe me, I think, or at least.
Oh, okay.
Bring me cookies while I watch the movie again.
If you guys want us to do a reassumption of Gangs of New York, buy us a coffee.
Yeah.
Buymeacoffee.com/assumingpod and put in the notes Gangs of New York.
That way,
you can bribe Mikey by buying him coffee.
I'll be grumpy, but I'll be caffeinated and grumpy, which is funny sometimes.
That's a good first pick, though. That's a formidable villain to be chasing after with a posse.
Absolutely.
And you would need to form a large posse with a crazy man like that.
Oh, he's got a whole town of ruffians that support him.
All right. That's a great one. Now, my number one pick is from a movie that's considered one of the greatest Western films ever made.
Ooh.
It is the last great Western film directed by the director John Ford.
Okay.
Very well known. Came out in 1962, and it has none other than John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart, and Lee Marvin in it.
Lee Marvin.
And my villain is Lee Marvin as Liberty Valance in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
So wait, does that mean you're going to be the man who shot him?
Maybe.
You already have the movie made after you. I love it. You gotta do the prequel to get there. No, I'm just kidding.
So I came to this, I heard on one of the many other podcasts I listened to, I heard the great comedian Larry Miller talking about a good movie The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance was, how just wonderful John Ford, all the stuff. He's very into the golden age of Hollywood type stuff. And so I was like, oh, you know, sounds interesting. I love Lee Marvin and everything I've seen him in. You know, I haven't seen tons of John Wayne Westerns, but I know he's the guy, and I love Jimmy Stewart. So let's go like rent this movie. And I did. And everybody's right. It's an amazingly built and shot Western. What's funny is it came out in black and white in 1962 when mm-hmm. it had tons of people who could afford color.
That's true.
Yeah, the rumor is that it was shot in black and white because John Wayne and Jimmy Stewart were in their early 50s and they're supposed to be playing guys like 25 years younger.
Had to hide that extra makeup, but they didn't have the youngified technology. Yeah,
they didn't have youngified technology, so they black and whited it. Because it's shot in flashback, so it does have Jimmy Stewart of age in it initially. Mm-hmm. But it's all centers around Jimmy Stewart plays a guy who's going out west to be a lawyer, to put his slate up, you know, as a lawyer out in the west. And on his way out there, his stagecoach gets robbed by Lee Marvin's Liberty Valance, and he beats the living poop out of James Stewart. He's got this silver handled like whip thing.
Yeah.
It's a cat of nine tails, I guess, or whatever. But he's always like smacking people with it, and he's just a dastardly guy, and just all black and it's black and white, but you can tell he's wearing all black and silver.
Oh yeah,
it's
that silver that does the class thing again.
Yeah.
It's like it levels him up a little bit.
It does level him up, and you know he's got his minions with him, but he just comes across as just despicable and just a menacing fearmonger, and just rides around the West robbing stagecoaches and causing trouble wherever he goes. And there's a real famous scene where the town's called Shinbone that he's in, which is great. But he comes into Shinbone there, and like everyone's afraid of this guy, even like the town marshal. You know there's a great scene where Jimmy Stewart is like, he has his law book out, and he's like, because I guess the marshal goes, I don't have the jurisdiction to take care. It's that guy. I forget what the character is, but he's that guy who talks like this.
Yeah.
You know, he's a very famous character actor. And, you know, he's an overweight guy. And he's like, I ain't got the jurisdiction. And Jimmy Stewart's like, I looked in my law book and it does say you have the jurisdiction right here. And he's like, oh, okay. Jurisdiction for what? And he's like, to arrest Liberty Valance. He's like, I got to go now. It's great. It's a great scene. Yeah,
not that guy.
But the only person who's not scared of Liberty Valance is John Wayne's character.
That's true.
And there's a great scene where, you know, poor Jimmy Stewart can't get any work as a lawyer, so he has to work as a waiter.
Yep.
in the Eaton House. I don't know what they call it. It's not a saloon because the saloon's a different building. But
yeah, the mess hall for the town.
Yeah, and Liberty Valance comes in there and is like, oh, look at this fella. He's a waiter. And he trips him, but he was carrying John Wayne's steak. So John Wayne's upset because his steak hit the floor.
Scene. Does Valance remember that he's the guy he robbed waiter?
I think so.
Okay.
You know,
which is why he keeps picking on him.
Yeah, because I think he was like, I'm a lawyer. And he's like, oh, what are you going to do? He goes, the only law around here is the law at the end of my gun, you know. And then Lee Marvin doing it is just, Lee Marvin's great as a villain. I love how we see him as a hero in a lot of these things, but him as a villain is just so intimidating, so scary.
That's it.
And he's portrayed as like, no matter how much he drinks, he can shoot straight. And,
of course.
You know, it's just this.
I shoot better when I'm drunk.
Yeah, and he just he has like no decency. He's always just whipping people with his whip and stealing everything he wants and throwing bottles and just shooting into random buildings and just it's just he's just a menace. He's terrible.
That makes for an excellent villain. Do we know, like, is the Cat of Nine Tails an affectation for him, or would people of that time had a use for it? Like, is it a stagecoach thing?
I mean, maybe for spurring your horse on, but, okay, but usually they would use a crop, which that's is right, like yeah, is a reins, more rigid stick with a little loop of leather at the end.
So it so is a
cat
person
of nine tails. Is, yeah, and it's all fancy. Yeah. It's bedazzled.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's an affectation.
Okay.
For sure.
Absolutely.
It's just he's got his minions. He'll do anything he says. It's just he's such a great villain, and this is such a great movie. This, if you've ever heard anyone do like the John Wayne impression, and they're like, "Hey, Pilgrim,"
real slow. Yeah,
that comes from this movie. Mm. He says because Jimmy Stewart is from the East,
yep,
and he calls him a pilgrim. He calls him Pilgrim through the whole movie. But he messes with them too. John Wayne's character messes with the poor Jimmy Stewart character.
It's Jimmy Stewart. How could you not mess with him?
Yeah, but he ends up the long the short of it. Spoiler, because it kind of comes out at the very beginning, is that Jimmy Stewart is the man who shot Liberty Valance, which leads to him getting elected like governor and then senator, and now he's like in the future, he's like on the ticket to be vice president.
Yep.
And the whole thing comes out because he comes to this Hobunk town, back to this Hobunk town, because the John Wayne character has died, and he comes to his funeral.
That's right.
And a newspaper man is like, why is the senator here in this Hobunk town at this guy's funeral?
You're talking about the man who shot Liberty
right.
Valance.
And it comes out that he confesses that he never actually shot Liberty Valance. Mm-hmm. It was John Wayne from the dark alley who shot him.
Yeah.
Because the guy had never shot a gun before and he actually had missed, but John Wayne shot him with the rifle. Yep.
And, the secret hero.
But it has this great line in it where, like, because he, after, like, the guy and the newspaper man sitting there and he's got, like, I don't know what to call him, a scribe is like writing everything down. And after he tells him this, it's great because he grabs the paper and he tears it up and he throws it in the belly pot belly stove.
Yep.
And he's like, what are you doing? And he's like, he says to him, he goes, when the legend becomes fact, you print the legend.
That's it. And like that, it's a catchy title. That's why I know of it.
Yeah.
Because it's ominous, but you can't really tell which way. It's just the man who shot Liberty Valance. Like, that's a legend. That's,
yeah.
Who is that? And it's not the person, it's the action that's important, and the mm-hmm. legend and the story rather than the man itself, because yeah. It was actually John Wayne.
Right.
Which actually isn't a spoiler, because you're now the man who shot Liberty Valance, and we don't know mm-hmm. how that happened yet. So,
but it is, clear. It is, I agree with him. It is one of the more perfect Westerns. That, Unforgiven, there's a few ones that just kind of knock it out of the park.
Yep.
As far as Westerns go. And as far as a classic black and white Western, you're not going to do any better than this one. I mean, the star power in it alone, and just Lee Marvin is just great. Like, if anyone who did a Western outlaw villain after 1962 was pulling moves from Lee Marvin in this one.
Or just doing the evil eye from Angel Eyes from Clint Eastwood.
Right.
Good, Bad, and the Ugly. It was right. One of those two, yeah.
Exactly. It was one of those two, but I mean...
Lee Marvin.
Yeah. There's so many things that you see in here that you've seen again later.
Yep.
That you have to keep reminding yourself that, like, oh, no, wait. This was the first time.
That's where it comes from.
Because there's a great one that just pops into my head that I love is, like, when he kind of like gets intimidated by John Wayne,
mm-hmm.
but he won't like let it know. He backs down from the whole stake incident.
Okay.
And he leaves, and one of his minions had grabbed a bottle of whiskey, and you know, he grabs the whiskey from him and he pulls the cork out with his
yep.
with his mouth and then spits it and then just chugs the whiskey.
Chug it right there.
And then just throws it at the building and then just starts shooting up the town. I mean,
that's ultimate outlaw.
Yeah.
Like, I'm mad, I'm gonna go to the middle of the street, get real drunk, cause destruction, yeah. and shoot stuff.
Yeah, it's... great. And it's
funny to learn now that you said that it's black and white because of the old timiness or the older actors, and that makes sense. But it works in Lee Marvin's favor because it makes that villain a little it works so much better in black and white.
Yes, than
it does. I would assume it does in color.
Yeah, it does. So, Liberty Valance. If you all haven't seen that movie,
excellent.
I would go see it.
Just for the fact that it's the classic Western, because of it's one of the Westerns that has the great title, is like judging a book by its cover. You can tell it's going to be an awesome movie because the title is awesome. Yes. Kind of like Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia.
Right.
I don't care what that movie's about. I am watching it.
For me, this is one of those like TCM, like Your 12 Angry Men. This is one of those TCM things that really deserves to, I don't care how old you are. You know, I don't care how old you think it is.
Yep.
It's worth a watch. It holds up. And it's just, and plus John Ford was so good.
Mm-hmm.
We should never forget these guys.
Oh, absolutely not.
You know, especially, you know, I've really, one of my top like actors of old is Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, for sure.
It's amazing. There's a reason why people call Tom Hanks the Jimmy Stewart of our age.
Because
it's a very, very good comparison.
Who would you say is at least today's Jimmy Stewart? If you had to,
that's Tom Hanks.
But I would almost say he's on the way out.
Oh, past that?
Like he earned it, but now it's right. If we had to elect a new one.
I mean, I hate to kind of get on this bandwagon, but I really think that. But with the diluting of with streaming, the diluting of entertainment, like everything is everywhere now. But people are saying there's going to be like no movie stars anymore.
I can see that.
Just because there's no like really, there's just not.
Yeah.
And so it's really hard to pick because, you know, that was the thing is Jimmy Stewart was this, if he's in a movie, people will go see it.
That's it.
And Tom Hanks was that way too. But as far as like people in their like 30s and 40s now.
Yeah.
I don't really know if there's anybody like that anymore.
I would almost say that's also maybe possibly a minor casualty of superhero movies being so big because everybody's that hero, but there's not much room for a Jimmy Stewart in there.
Right.
Like you kind of get it with Spider-Man a little bit. You know, everybody gets a little bit of the moments of the everyday like good guy, like without the superhero aspect of it.
Right.
You know, so we don't, because we have superheroes now, it's hard to have the Tom Hanks where like, oh, you're the suburban hero, you know?
Right.
Like, not really suburban, but that level.
Yeah, it's almost like it's the thing. It's like, here's a spider. People are going to see Spider-Man.
Yes.
And there's been like four people who've played him.
Yeah.
You know, is that right? Three? Four. Is it four now?
Four?
Yeah, we're in four now.
Not counting animation.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it'd be hard to pick that because we're in a weird place right now.
There you go.
You know, as far as movie stars go.
Then we can just default to Tom Hanks 2.0, who is Colin Hanks. And so we can make him do more stuff.
Yeah. So those are our villains that our posses are going after.
Liberty Valance and Bill the Butcher.
Those are great picks.
I like it.
I do say so ourselves.
And I think they would might have team up. Like they are the type of bad guys that would see the advantage of cooperation to achieve disastrous ends, if you know what I'm fixing to reckon to say.
Oh, yeah. Man, that'd be scary.
Then we have Uber Large Posse to go after them.
Yeah. I can't believe what's going on. Bill the Butcher is hooked up with Liberty Valance. That's a great name. That's not his name, just like Bill the Butcher ain't his name.
But that's what I'm saying. The title is so great because you can't tell that's the bad guy from the title. Like if it was like the man who shot Dastardly Dale, oh, okay, we're going to watch the hero story. It's like the man who shot Liberty Valance. It's like, wait, is that a good or a bad thing?
Yeah.
Do we like Liberty? Do we like Valance?
Yes.
What do we think about Liberty and Valance?
I don't know. That's it's such a good Western name, man.
That's it. Liberty Valance, Alfredo Garcia.
Yeah. Love it.
Blondie,
yeah. Oh, that's great. Man, I'm going to miss this Build-A Posse. Should we pick a train? No.
Pick a train, pick a horse, pick a town. Casino name. We can go all day. No, we will have to figure out something that brings us back to at least this time period, because this is a fun sort of niche of media.
It is. It's for sure. Westerns are super fun. So maybe we will do Gangs of New York Reassumption or something like that.
There you go.
We'll see. But you guys are going to have to buy us a coffee.
Yeah.
Oh, man. This has been so much fun. We want to know from you guys what villain you want your posse to go after.
Yes, please.
You can hit us up on all the social medias at Assuming Pod. I'm not going to say them all because one of them keeps changing its name. But all the social medias at Assuming Pod.
Yes.
You'll find us there. You can also send us a Gmail, assumingpositions@gmail.com. Every single time, I always am saying, yo, Mikey, how do you want them to format the Gmail? And he's been through the Western stuff like crazy. We've had telegrams and wanted posters and
that's it.
And everything else. We had brands, you know.
That's true.
We had, like, you know, the good old, like, Ken Burns, you know, like, Civil War.
Absolutely.
Written.
We've My dearly beloved.
Yeah. You know, but so I think I'm going to call an audible.
Go for it.
And I say...
You outlaw.
I say, yeah, outlaw. I say you format it in the style of one of Dutch's speeches from Red Dead Redemption, a treatise on how the West was meant to be, and tell us who your villain is in it. You know?
That's perfect. I love it. Yeah. That also just makes me wanting to start to do... cowboy accents with fancy words, because that delights me to know it. Like plethora and treatise.
Yeah.
I have a treatise. I don't know. It's so much funnier when it's a good old boy saying those words.
It is. It is great. It's great.
So, yeah, please, opinions like that.
If you guys like what we do here, you want to support us, putting a podcast on ain't free. You can buy us coffee. Buymeacoffee.com/assumingpod, and we will put it to good use.
Yum, yum, yum.
For caffeine. We want to thank you guys so much for listening. You're the best positrons that ever were. We also want to thank that guy, Brad, for doing our announcing, Not Scott Production for equipment, and Jazzar for our music. We hope you all have happy trails. Head on down the road. We hope you don't run into Bill the Butcher or Liberty Valance along the way and get pulled off your stagecoats like poor Jimmy Stewart and whipped about the head and shoulder with a cat of nine tails.
That's it.
Because some people might be into that, but Jimmy Stewart weren't.
Until we meet again, partner.
Yeehaw.
Why is that cat wearing a suit? Oh! Whoa! Caterwaul!
The streaming and the what do I want? Not it's not dissolution. What do you call it when stuff is dissolution, dissolving, the distribution? What that you put something in water and it goes distillation, the
dissolution works.
The watering down.
I know what you're trying to say.
The
Watering down, the diluting.
Diluting, yes, aha, thank you.